Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. Here we are, the final episode of 2021. And I want this episode to light you up. I want it to be the spark that you need going into next year. And so I'm really excited to introduce our guest today. His name is Jonathan Fields. He's actually been on the show before. He's been on a while back, but he's here to talk about your sparkotype. How do you land on something, whether you are already kind of an entrepreneur or not? How do you figure your way to? How do you position yourself to get success, not just success with money, success with team, success with whatever goals you might have, but how do you get to a point where you are doing something that absolutely sparks you? Every single morning you wake up and you get so excited to go and do that thing. And what's really interesting about what Jonathan is doing and the research and the work that he's up to is he's helping people understand what their sparkotypes are. And I love that word because it sort of sounds like architecture, but spark as in light up and ignite, but also the fact that different people get lit up about different things. So this is an amazing opportunity for all of us to, as we listen to Jonathan speak about these things, to discover, well, is it true that what we are doing actually lights us up, or might there be something in and around that that we can get even more excited about? Or if not, how might we go find something that ignites us in that way, right? That sparks us. And we're going to talk about the different kinds of archetypes, and I'll share and reveal mine. Jonathan reveals his. We'll share what the pros and cons are to each of those. Now, you might be thinking that, well, this is just similar to like an Enneagram or a StrengthFinders test, and in a way that it, yes, does provide some sort of analysis of you and categorizes us in that sort of way. Yeah, but of all the different kinds of things that I've done to sort of take these personal self-assessments with, this one is definitely the most interesting and the one that I feel gives you answers that can definitely push you forward. And this is the right time to listen to this as we roll into the new year. So happy new year to you and your family. I wish you all the health in the world. But right now, let's get excited because we got Jonathan Fields with us. Let's roll the final intro of the year. Here we go.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, if he could live in any video game universe, it would be from Legends of Zelda, Pat Flynn.
Our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you're like most entrepreneurs, you probably spend a lot of time sitting. Well, A standing desk can make a huge difference. It's actually a complete game changer. If you haven't tried one before, this offer from Uplift is for you. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. Over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk. Innovative product designs, reasonable pricing, same-day shipping, free accessories with every desk. You can see why they're such a big hit. Standing while I work helps me get the creative juices flowing, helps me focus and stay productive, and I'm way more alert when I'm standing. And Uplift is a great deal. An industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that. And they provide a state-of-the-art experience. They're stable, made of very solid materials, and there are over 100 desktop choices and customizations available. Go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UPLIFT desk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. What is up, everybody? Paflin here, and welcome to session 537 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. And like I said, we're going to help you find and discover your Sparkotype, what that is, and how to use it to your best advantage going into 2022. Wow, it's weird to say that. 2022. Here we go. Jonathan Fields. Jonathan, welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
I'm excited because you're going to help us and everybody who's listening right now understand what lights us up. And, you know, I'd spoken about this in my book, Will It Fly? The first three chapters are actually, in fact, before you validate a business idea, you need to validate who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. You've sort of taken this and have just gone so deep into it. It's become the center of focus for you lately. And you have a new book now called Sparked. What is Sparked about and what's the whole idea behind it?
I mean, I've been deep into the question of how do we find a new work that makes us come alive for about two decades now. It's funny, I recently was thinking about it and I tied all the way back to 9/11, actually, where I was in New York, knew people who didn't come home that day and had also just signed a six-year lease for a floor in a building to open a new business the day before. And I woke up that next day and I was just like, okay, so first I was concerned about life, you know, who I knew and the state of my city. And then also, you know, was I going to say yes to this new venture with, I was married with a new home and a three-month-old baby at the same time. The whole sort of, you know, the full catastrophe of that moment really brought me to my knees and had me reimagining and reexamining what is this thing we call work? You know, more broadly, how do we live a good life? But also, we spend so many of our waking hours doing this thing we call work. And to the extent that we can have it be a nourishing experience rather than an emptying experience or just a box that checks sustaining ourselves financially, which of course is important, but there's more to life than that. I wanted to know how to do that better. So I leaned into this new venture, which just happened to be a yoga center in New York, launched and became this beautiful community and also a flourishing business. And that really planted the seeds of a two decades long process of inquiry into how do we show up and really understand what are the things to say yes or no to, whether we're starting our own business, whether we're working for someone else, whether we're a professional who's got a practice. How do we know what really drives us and what gives us that feeling of coming alive in the context of work? And probably over the last 5 years or so, that's become a much narrower focus for me. And I began to wonder, is there a set of identifiable, mappable impulses that exist across all different people that are underneath all the jobs and titles and roles and industries, and or if we're starting our own companies, like that are underneath the brand and the service and the product that we're offering? Is there a deeper impulse or effort that we all have that would give us the feeling of coming alive? And I'll, because coming alive or being sparked is such a nebulous word, I'll tell you exactly what I mean by that. It's the confluence of five different states. One is meaning. Does it actually matter to me? Two is flow. Is it allowing me to absorb myself in this sort of like transcendent state where I become a part of the thing itself, time fuges, and I enter a state of hypercognition, hypercreativity. The third element is what corporate world would call engagement, but I just call excitement and energy. I'm actually excited to do this thing when I wake up in the morning, even if I know it's really hard and it's going to take a lot out of me, which as founders pretty much always does. The last two elements there are expressed potential or performance. Am I actually leveraging all that I have to lever? And then finally, a sense of purpose. Do I have an immediate sense of purpose? Like I'm working towards something I can identify that matters to me. And more broadly, do I have a sense of purpose in life? So when I use that phrase, coming alive, it's the confluence of those five states that I'm talking about. So I was wondering, do we have this sort of universal set of impulses that would give us this state where we, if we exert ourselves in alignment with that, we could enter that place more regularly. Because if we did, and I could map them, it'd be really helpful for me just as a multi-time founder. But also if we could create tools around that, that would be super helpful. I had no idea if these impulses existed. So I started literally deconstructing every imaginable job, role, title, endeavor. And I found these things just showing up over and over and over underneath them, you know, like five layers deep, regardless of what the title was, regardless of what the job description was. And it distilled down to these 10 impulses for effort that give us this feeling of coming alive. And once I realized we had these impulses, I also realized that each one of them has its own kind of quirky set of behaviors and tendencies and preferences that wrap around the impulse to form an archetype, sort of like a broader way of being in the world. And I started calling them sparkotypes, just kind of a fun way to say the archetype for work that sparks you.
I love that.
I was bouncing these off of a lot of different people and getting a lot of sort of soft data that was validating the ideas, but I wanted to validate them at a much larger scale or invalidate them. I was kind of open to either one. So in 2018, we spent pretty much the whole year building a tool, an assessment, the sparkotype assessment. We finally came out of beta with that tool at the end of the year. Since then, close to 600,000 people have completed the assessment, generating around 30 million data points. So we've got really powerful validation of the fundamental idea right now. And now, because of that volume of people, we have a mountain of stories and use cases and applications. And now I've been able to work with organizations from startup founders to the executive leadership team of massive global enterprises in a leadership context, in a team building context. And the application and the uses are just, it's really incredible. It's been this incredible journey, really. Two decades in the making, 5 years or so with a much more intentional pursuit of it to try and map these things and then build tools that would go out into the world and help people. And that's really where the whole body of work has emerged from.
I love it. You're helping us sort of deconstruct the DNA of who we are and what lights us up and allows us to get into flow and those kinds of things. And I think the more that we can understand who we are, much like how we might take a 23andMe test, for example, to understand more about our body. Here we are with your work and the sparkotypes, understanding more about, well, what lights us up, which then can have certain applications. What are the applications of, for example, somebody who takes this sparkotype test and discovers more about themselves? What can they then do with that? Because I think there's a lot of tests out there that I'm sure sparkotypes get compared to, strength finders and 16 personalities and all these kinds of things where, okay, it's cool to know, but what do I do with that?
And that was one of my big things. When I said yes to a project of this scope, which takes a huge amount of energy and resources to develop, you know, we've all taken most of those assessments out there and typing profiles and stuff like that. And a lot of them have great value. You know, a lot of them speak more broadly to personality, to relational styles. There are two different strengths assessments that I'm aware of, StrengthsFinder and the VIA Strengths. One speaks mostly to skills and talents, the other to fundamental character traits. When I looked at the universe of things that were out there, I said, this is fascinating. Just like you said, it's kind of cool to know. But what do I do with these? And it wasn't super clear to me. And they also, they weren't speaking to the one fundamental question that I was trying to answer, which is, how do I wake up in the morning and understand how to make a discerning choice, what to say yes or no to in the context of either work that is available to me or maybe presented to me, or if I'm building my own business or my own product or my own service, how do I actually understand beneath the title, beneath the description, what is the effort that it will take to make this happen? And will that either fill me up or empty me out? And I wasn't seeing that in the marketplace. And that's fundamentally what the sparkotypes are about. So on a personal level, you know, this is a tool that lets you look at the way that you're working and better understand what to say yes or no to. If I exert myself in this particular way, or if I build this service or build this product, or if I say yes to this team, will it allow this impulse that's inside of me to work in a very particular way? Will it give it a chance to come out? Will it let it be fully expressed in the world? And then as we build teams, as we become leaders, it works on two different levels, which has been really interesting to me. One is just personally. Well, if I can understand what is the thing inside of me and tap that as much as possible as a leader, then I am much more intrinsically motivated to be my best self. And I'm going to be much more engaged and alive and activated and energized. And people will feel that when they interact with me as a leader. But then on the other side, imagine if we actually had sort of like this fundamental profile of all the people within our organizations or our teams, And they had that information too. And they could make much better choices about where they were going to focus their energy so that the net effect is, A, remove friction. So the friction side of things, because people are doing work that they're really not aligned with, it kind of dissolves away. And then the notion of motivation becomes a little bit of a misnomer. So we've known for years that, you know, a classic carrot and stick approach to motivation just doesn't work for more than a hot minute. And we've known that intrinsic motivation, really being internally motivated to do a particular type of work, is sort of the holy grail of motivation. This gets you there. You know, this is the thing that you wake up and do in, you know, just for the feeling that it gives you. Oftentimes you're working 12, 15 hours a day and you're doing it not because you're getting paid to do it. That's really nice byproduct, but you're doing it because it's letting you feel like, you know, who you are and what you're doing matters. You drop into that place of flow, the sense of purpose and joy and expressed potential and excitement. So when you think about motivation, if we can give people the tools to understand where to align their efforts within a team or organization, especially if we're building or leading that team and organization, as a leader, the lift that it takes from us to try and figure out how to, quote, motivate somebody, it largely diminishes because they're doing the thing that they're here to do.
You're no longer fighting against, but you're kind of going with. And it makes me think about my own journey. It took me forever to figure out that the parts that I love the most are the parts where I get to create and I get to really see the results of helping others, right? And when I took the Sparkotype test, I really loved how the questions were framed. Many of the questions were framed, if money wasn't an issue or if you were financially free, what would still get you to keep going? And I really loved that because it really made me think a little bit more about, well, if I had all the money in the world, I'd still do these things. And that's how I know. And so now that I've learned these things about myself, which again, took years of self-discovery, and you can discover these things quite quickly about yourself through something like a Sparkotype test, which we'll link to in the description and all that stuff. And you should definitely check out Jonathan's book, Sparked. We'll talk more about the book in just a minute, but it made me realize that I should just stay in creator mode. I am a maker and a sage, to use some of your archetypes. And as a result, I should not be the organizer. And somebody like Matt on my team, my co-CEO, who's been on the show several times, and if you just listen to him, you can tell that he's the type of person to really begin to distill lots of information into something that can be used and organized. And that's not me. I'm more of the visionary and he is more of the integrator. And I think that I can definitely see some real value in just learning about these things about not just yourself, but the other people that you're working with.
And I love that profile for you. It doesn't surprise me at all. When you take the assessment, you learn three metrics basically, and you just share what your three are. You learn what we call your primary Sparkotype. Kind of think of that as your strongest impulse for effort, for work that makes you come alive. So for you, that was the maker. And the impulse there is about making ideas manifest. It's the process of creation, you know, and from the outside looking in, looking at the volume, the stunning volume of what you have created, you know, over probably the decade or so we've known each other. I mean, it's unreal, you know, what you have created, you know, and it's really hard to be able to create consistently at that level because it's not easy to do unless there's something inside of you that says like, this is the thing. You know, because you've got to constantly make decisions and allocate resources in the context of uncertainty as the stakes keep growing higher. It's that wiring, that deeper impulse for creation that really helps sustain a maker through that process. So that's the primary for you. The two other metrics we share are what I call the shadow Sparkotype. Now, this is not shadow in the sort of Jungian, you know, dark side of things. It's shadow because it lives in the shadow of the primary, which means that you can think of it one of two ways. It's either kind of like the runner-up, your next strongest impulse for work that makes you come alive. But we also see this much more nuanced relationship very often, which is that a lot of people will do the work of their shadow in order to be able to do the work of their primary at a higher level. So for you, you share that your shadow Sparkotype is the sage. The fundamental impulse for the sage is to awaken insight. It's all about illumination. Now that can show up formally in the role of a teacher, but it can show up in almost any other context or domain. As a parent, it can show up in a boardroom. It can show up in a biz dev conversation. It can show up as a founder or a leader with a team whose fundamental like mode of leadership is to teach everybody so that it becomes self-sufficient and not codependent on one person. So for you, that makes perfect sense for me also, because this pairing, you know, this is what you do. You know, it's sort of like you're building things that actually have this effect of turning around and illuminating a path for other people. So, and you have done, I've seen you do this over and over and over and over in all different forms and shapes. That pairing also is interesting because the two different things inform each other. You'll create something or you'll create an experience of illumination. And through that, you also get feedback. That feedback then allows you to then think about what is the thing that I'm making, the container, to sort of like share wisdom and how can I do it better? How can I actually make it a higher level? How can I iterate on what I've just created and keep making it better and better and better? And that is exactly what I've seen you do over a period of years. I mean, if you look at what you were sort of like first offering a decade ago, you know, like compared to the level of what you create now, not that what you were doing a you know, like years back was in, you know, in any way bad, but the quality and the depth, literally on every level of what you're doing, you just keep raising the bar. And I have no doubt that the volume of feedback and insight that you get back from those who raise their hand to learn from you goes right into the process creation. I mean, at least from the outside looking in, that's what it feels like. Is that accurate to you?
That's 100% accurate. And I mean, it's the reason why SPI is making a shift even in our branding and our positioning to really focus on audience-driven models. I mean, that's the name of our online summit this year that I think would have already passed by the time this episode comes out. But audience-driven, meaning building an audience, but then utilizing that audience and the feedback that you're collecting to help inform what it is that you create. And that's exactly what we've been doing here. I wouldn't have created anything I created out of thin air. It always comes from the audience in some way, shape, or form. And we're doing a little bit more of planting our flag in the ground about that and how important that is and how much easier it is to take the guesswork out of growing a business in that way. But it's really interesting how you can see that from the outside. My question for you is, for people listening here, if, for example, a person were to take the Sparkotype test and they are not a maker, should they make at all?
Yeah. And I love that question. And the answer is yes. But they also would probably create in a way that was strongly informed by what their fundamental impulse is. And they may also then partner with or collaborate with somebody who has that stronger impulse to actually just sort of like be the person who makes something from nothing, who is driven by that deeply generative impulse of the maker. So it's similar to like a leader. So like, we use the word leader in a lot of different contexts, but you know, people kind of say, well, like, you know, should somebody be a leader if they don't have the fundamental impulse to do that thing? And by the way, one of the Sparkotypes is what I call the warrior, and the impulse for the warrior is to gather, organize, lead, and protect. So if somebody has that impulse, they're probably the kid who was gathering friends on the playground at 5 years old to go on an adventure or captaining teams in junior high school and gathering family members to go on a trip. You know, it shows up in all parts of life, you know, and you would think, okay, so that person has the innate impulse to do this thing. Awesome. But does that mean everybody else shouldn't do that? And the answer is no, of course not. We all can get a lot of joy around this. And also, we all are some blend of a bunch of different things. We identify the strongest impulses in the effort. That doesn't mean that you don't have some level of impulse for these. And as a leader, let's say you're, for example, one of the other impulses or Sparkotypes is the nurturer. The impulse of the nurturer is to lift others up. It's elevation. It's giving care and taking care. You're empathic. You see and feel what's going on with people, right? So if your fundamental impulse is, you know, if you're the nurturer, does that mean you shouldn't be a leader? Not at all. You could be a fantastic leader. What it does is it tells you that impulse is going to inform how you lead. So your particular approach to leadership is very likely going to be to constantly be scanning, really observing and understanding what's happening within the individual and group dynamic and experiences of those you lead. Where are people flourishing? Where are they suffering? And you're going to step in and you're going to tap that nurturer's impulse to be really astonishing at seeing people where they are, meeting people where they are, and knowing how to lift them up along the way when they're struggling. And that will be your mode of leadership. So it's sort of like the same thing with all the different Sparkotypes.
Love it. Thank you for that. What does a person do if they realize that what lights them up, what sparks them, what their nature is totally misaligned with the direction in life that they've gone down? How does a person begin to unravel that?
And this is the very reason that I actually start the book before I even get into the book with a very brief personal note, which says, you may discover something in the pages that may make you realize that what you're doing is actually, you know, like not well aligned with who you are. please don't blow everything up, because that is the fundamental impulse for a lot of people. They look at what they're doing, like they'll take the Sparkle tape, then they'll read the book, they'll get a deeper understanding, and then they'll look at the work that they're doing. And by the way, this can also be the work that you have created by your own hand. I have been a founder a number of times and found myself inadvertently creating a job within the company that I have started myself that doesn't allow me to do the thing that I'm here to do. You can't always point the finger at other people or cultures or organizations. But if you find yourself in that place, there can be a really strong impulse to just kind of like blow it all up and start over. I believe that that is potentially one of the ways that you can do it, but it is the resort of last course rather than first, especially for folks who are a little further into life. You've got responsibilities, maybe a family. It's not just you at that point if you decide to make a big disruptive change. And we tend to be pretty delusional. We tend to believe that we'll feel elated if we just blow everything up and then start over. And then the next thing will just happen super fast. It rarely does. Usually there's a window of sorrow and grief and disruption and picking up the pieces. And then it takes some time to figure out the next thing. So my approach, I think, is much gentler, which is first learn this thing about yourself. Then look at the thing that you're currently doing. And then ask yourself, how much of this impulse in me, how much of this Sparkle-type work gets out in the work that I'm currently doing? Be honest, you know, even if it's a hard analysis to make, you know, is it 10% of the time? Is it 20% of the time? Is it 70% of the time? And then once you have that benchmark, this is where it kind of gets cool. Ask yourself, okay, so in the context of what I'm currently doing, is there a way, without changing jobs or even job description, is there some way for me to do things that will let this thing out more and do less of what empties me? Are there tasks that I can look at? Are there processes? Are there projects? Are there different endeavors? Are there teams, right? When you start from this place of self-awareness and you actually for the first time know what the thing is that you need to be doing to get the feeling you want, something kind of profound happens, which is you look at the same exact job that you're doing. And all of a sudden, most people will start to see all sorts of different ways to express this thing that they haven't seen before because they A, didn't know what it was. So B, were never looking for opportunities to do more of it. But once you know it, and once you see that, you know, you start looking, most people can actually find a lot of ways to reimagine what they're doing so that this impulse can be integrated into the work that they're doing at a much higher level. Very often enough so that it actually gives them the feeling that they want to feel without having to blow everything up, without having to change jobs or companies or entire industries, which some people will sometimes be inclined to do. It's kind of like a reimagining process. And even if you get to a point where you say, like, this is a lot better, but it's still not getting me quite there. Well, okay, so now we've optimized the job for being sparked. Now let's look at all the different ways that you may actually invest effort outside of the quote JOB or the work that you've created for yourself. Look at the roles, look at the devotions, look at the activities that you either are doing or have the opportunity to do. And ask yourself, how can I choose things or do more of those things that are direct conduits for this impulse to get out of me and to actually be exercised in the world? And very often the blend of those, sort of like the things you wrap around that central devotion or job or role and an optimized central thing, that blend, it gives you everything that you need to do. And I think that's really important too, because, you know, as an adult in the world who also holds a value of financial integrity and security, you know, like I have a family and I want to do what I do to not cause huge disruption and support them. And that matters to me. I have a value around that. You know, I may get to a point where I've optimized my job, but it's still not quite getting me there. And realizing that you can look more broadly at all the different ways that you invest effort in your life, and they will all contribute to this feeling. Very often it gives us the freedom to honor that value of financial stability and security. And at the same time, it gives us ways, it gives us modes of really doing things in a way that allow us to be sparked so that we can kind of like, we can check both of those boxes.
You know, while you were speaking, I was thinking of just a random position, a job, maybe a secretary, for example, and the secretary understands about themselves that they are one of your archetypes, which is an advocate, you know, somebody who wants to use the platform that they have to make better for others. And I can imagine some very specific things that, for example, a secretary could do in their position, in their role, to advocate for the business, to advocate for certain individuals and their employees, to make them feel better. And I can imagine that doing some amazing things in return for that person who then understands that that's what lights them up. And because it lights them up, they'll probably go deep and make it really interesting and exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, like playing that role is probably not a line item in the job description for that person. Yet, if once they know what that impulse is, they'll start to actually see opportunities to exercise it all around them that they were never looking for before because they didn't know it mattered to them. And you could still stay in the same job. You can have the same, you know, description, the same company, but you transform the fundamental nature of the way that you're doing it so that you come so much more fully alive.
What brings you into a flow state, Jonathan? Where do you lie? What is your archetype, by the way?
So my profile is a maker is my primary, similar to you. And that showed up from the earliest age, from the time I was a kid. And scientist is my shadow. So which is, and that impulse is all about figuring things out. It's about burning questions, puzzles, quandaries. So those two interplay really powerfully for me and they have my whole life. My anti-sparkotype, and you didn't name yours, but I think you described it and I think we're the same, is the essentialist. So the work of the essentialist is effectively to create order from chaos. It's about systems, process, clarity, utility. I love when those things are in place. I love the fact that we have people in our team that have that impulse and like actually love to do that work because I love benefiting from that work. And I'm so happy that I'm not the one who has to do it. You know, the producer for Life Project podcast maintains this wicked editorial calendar with 40 different episodes and like 25 different parts of production at any given time. And she happens to be an essentialist. So she really likes that work. And I love that fact. So that's my profile. Was I right? Was your anti-spark type essentialist also, or was it something else?
It actually was advocate, in fact.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But I would imagine that if there was a secondary one, it would be that. And this is same thing. This is why I love Matt so much on my team, because he and the rest of the team, obviously, do those important things that allow for organization to happen without me having to do them so that I can do more making, so that I can do more creation, so that I can hopefully affect more lives through the internet in this way. So, I mean, imagine the conversations that you could have with your teammates, just like how Jonathan and I are talking about this right now and what that might mean for what you actually do and the things that actually allow everybody in the team to flourish in one way or another. And I think that can add some amazing things to the culture of your brand. And so I imagine that a lot of people, and I think I remember when I signed up for the Sparkotypes, there was like a group ID field, which I'm guessing means that that allows you to identify certain organizations who all sort of put in their data and stuff. What's the percentage of, if you know, individuals taking this test versus like actual, you know, companies who advocate for it?
The great preponderance is individuals right now, but we do work with organizations where I've worked with, you know, everyone from startup teams to the executive leadership team at a, you know, like global organization with 250,000 people in it. And then they'll have their senior leaders, you know, of 300, 400, 500 people take it. It's really interesting. We can then pull the data and see how it's unique to each organization, each team, and see prevalence data and sort of like, what is the prevalence of the different types and pairings across different teams? And then how does that show up? And imagine the conversations that people have with each other when they see this data within teams. It's fascinating. It is inspiring. There's also, which I didn't see coming, there's a forgiveness element that often bubbles up in conversation also. And that's often wrapped around the work of the anti-sparkotype. So the anti-sparkotype is the work that is generally, it's the heaviest lift. It is the thing that comes least naturally, takes the most out of you, requires the greatest amount of recovery, and often requires the greatest amount of extrinsic motivation because of that. And again, it's sort of like a wiring thing. This is not like you're not a slacker. It's not that you're not skilled at it. In fact, it may be a part of your job that you just have to do. So you may have actually become quite competent at it because it's not organically what you want to do. But it, you know, nobody gets to opt 100% out of the stuff that doesn't just fully light them up. Like that's the reality of every job, even jobs that you create. There's parts of it that war with you. But when you realize that actually there's nothing wrong with you, and it's not that you're a slacker, it's not that you haven't invested the energy in it, it's not that you don't care. It's simply there's something about the way that you're wired where this type of work is a heavier lift for you. There tends to be a sense of just personal forgiveness around that, but also within a team dynamic, people are like, oh, okay. So The same reason it takes so much more for you to do this type of work. Well, there's this other type of work that actually is a really heavy lift for me too. And now we understand that about each other. So there tends to be a sense of personal, but also interrelational understanding and forgiveness around these things. And also it's easier to negotiate different ways to do different types of work within a team, because we all want to sort of like be in the place where we're doing as much of the stuff that lights us up. And often when we realize, there's another sense of realization, a little bit of a revelation around the fact that for many people, the work that is their anti-sparkotype is actually the primary sparkotype of someone else. And we can't conceive of that being true. You know, like the fact when I realized that the essentialist work, like that there are actually people who wake up in the morning and cannot wait to do that work, I was like, this can't be possible because it is so utterly draining for me. But in fact, there are those people. So it's really cool to sort of like be able to have those conversations within, within, you know, like different relationships and teams.
That's so true. As a maker and a scientist, so your archetypes, what do you do with relation to your environment around you? You know, you had mentioned having team members that do take care of this sort of anti sparkotype for you, but you know, your actual work environment, for example, what do you do to best set yourself up for success knowing that you are a maker and a scientist?
One of the things that I do actually is, as a maker, one of the things that a lot of makers tend to get really frustrated by is friction and inefficiency, which is a little bit weird because as a maker also, to get to sort of like the best version of what you want to create, you've got to stumble a lot. You've got to experiment a lot. And you got to like trip and fail a lot. But you're always trying to learn from that. You want to get to that place of like, you know, like the best possible output as soon as you can. Well, an interesting example actually is what we're doing right now. You know, like for 6 years, I produced a podcast, you know, like Good Life Project, and we still produce it, but we only produced in conversations in the studio, similar to sort of like, you know, like your approach. And all of a sudden last year, we couldn't do that anymore, right? So the maker in me is like, I have in my mind a vision of exactly how I want this thing to look and feel. And there's a quality that I hold myself to of the output that I have. And all of a sudden I couldn't do it, you know, and I blinked and I was like, okay, does this mean I'm just going to tap out because I can't figure out how to do this at the level that rises to the taste that I have for what is okay, what is acceptable for me? And I almost did, but then I said, you know what, let me test my assumptions. And I went on a bit of an experimentation mission. So we've been experimenting with all sorts of different platforms and equipment. And so that we could actually, I could basically step into that maker mode and completely reimagine our production and recording process so that it's remote and actually mobile, because I've been semi-nomadic for the last year, and still produce at a level that makes the maker in me feel like, yeah, I'm proud of what we're doing. It's meeting the bar that I have for what I'm okay putting into the world. So there's been a process of iteration around all the different tools and platforms. And I have cycled through a lot of different systems along the way. And you know, like that's just one example in the context of the media that I make, that I create, that I produce.
And I've always noticed that about you ever since I first saw you on stage, just your level of production, your level of performance, and what you make is really, really high up there. So I noticed that from the outside. I just wanted to acknowledge that for you and for everybody listening.
Thanks. And that's one of the things I've admired about you as well. Like from the beginning, you could tell like you have a vision of what you want this thing to be, and you're constantly iterating on how to do it. And the other thing that I had to reimagine is our systems and processes more broadly, and our team. Like in order to meet, because I'm now doing things differently as a maker. And that means like there are things that I don't want to be doing all of a sudden again. So we needed to reimagine our team to a certain extent. And there are also really simple things like, you know, our show is ad supported, which means that I'm doing ad reads and I'm totally cool doing it. And I love our sponsors. And at the same time, for some reason, there's something in me that really doesn't like writing the ad copy, you know? And so that is not my best use of sort of like the creation process of that, you know, like micro experience of what we're doing. So we bring on someone who loves doing that, you know, like who is a wordsmith and loves copywriting and doing those things. So it's sort of like I'm continually reimagining systems, processes, and team members that will allow me to do more of the stuff that just genuinely is an expression of my maker impulse, and less of the stuff that kind of like makes me cringe a little bit, not because there's anything wrong with it, but because it creates friction with the thing that I do most like to do. And for me, the tell, I'm curious what it is for you too. I feel it viscerally. If there's just perpetual resistance to doing something that objectively, it just really isn't that hard. That's a tell to me. I'm like, okay, so there's something in me that's saying this is misaligned in some way, shape, or form. And I need to figure out how to sort of like resource that better.
Yeah, for me, it's often procrastination. Because if I was excited about something, I would just dive right in. So the procrastination at times is just, I don't like doing this. So how might I get it done, or who might do it for me? That being said, sometimes on certain levels, like right now, I'm working on my next book. The procrastination is coming from just fear of a project that I'm making so big in my head. So I have to kind of weigh those things against each other sometimes. And then sometimes a tell is easy as flipping to Chrome to check something while I'm in the middle of something else. If I was actually in a deep state of flow, I wouldn't even think about doing that. Something is checking me out of what I'm doing. And that's a tell for me for sure. So Jonathan, I have one last question to propose to you. And that is, when our spark, this thing that lights us up, becomes such a huge flame, like it is a bonfire now that lights us up so much that we are basically hustling so hard that it just starts to affect other parts of our lives. How do you respond to overwork with relation to the things that we love doing so much? How do we keep balance all along the way?
This is such an important question. And I think sometimes it's funny. People who very often create their own private practice or enterprise or business kind of feel like, well, that'll never happen to me because I'm doing what I love.
Right. Right. What do they say? It's like, do what you love and you'll never have to work a day. Right.
Right. It's like, no, actually, I work really, really hard. I work a lot of days and I love what I do, but still you don't opt out of the risk for burnout and for overwhelm and fatigue and stress, you know? And very often it's actually the exact opposite. You're probably at a higher risk of that because you are so deeply connected and very often lose objectivity because you're just in it all the time and it never leaves your brain. So for me, I have developed like circuit breakers, basically mechanisms in my life that are designed to sort of like trip when I'm going a little bit too far down a dark hole and pull me out and remind me, oh, there's life outside of this actually. So, an example of that might be sort of like just a weekly check-in. And I have been doing this for years now with three people. We're all founders, multi times over. So we've been through the process. We know the life and we all love what we do. And every Sunday, there's a form that goes out to us automatically with a series of questions that we ask, which is designed to have us reflect on what's been going well. What are we struggling with? Are we okay, investing the amount of energy that we're doing? What's happening more broadly in our lives? And that gets filled out literally every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. The three of us, we've been doing it for years. And it's this tripwire. It's an accountability mechanism so that we know each other really well. And we also know what our values are. And we know that, we all have families that we hold dear. And we will call each other, and call each other on misaligned action or when we're kind of like losing touch of the other parts of our lives that matter to us. So we've got both an automated, like tech-based mechanism in terms of the prompt, the form, and then we've got human accountability wrapped around that. Whereas like first me knowing that if I'm filling out this form, automatically I'm going to be basically reflecting to myself whether I'm completely like out of balance. And then it's going to be seen by people who love me, who know me, and are not there to take me down, but actually are there to basically lift me up and remind me sometimes, hey, you may need to go for a walk, or you may need to spend more time with your wife, or you may need to do this because I'm looking at what's happening in your life. And I'm also looking at sort of like the tone of what you're writing and starting to feel like it's not entirely healthy. So I have a number of different things like that set up. And also with my wife, who happens to be my business partner. So we both need that, to each other, because we can both get completely immersed in the work that we're doing together. And because we're building actually two different companies together now, it can be all consuming and we have to kind of constantly pull out of it. The other thing for me is I have a daily practice of meditation and breath work and movement. And those are really, they're like meta practices. They pull me out of being in the work. And I happen to be in Boulder, Colorado now. And when I'm hiking on a mountain and I see the sun lower on the mountain, then I turn around and I see, like my shadow 25 feet long on a trail. It can't help not just bring you back into the present moment and reconnect you with the sense of nature and wonder and awe and the realization that, yes, work can be amazing. It can be deeply meaningful and rewarding, and you can still lose yourself in it and burn out. And there are other things that really add grace and meaning and purpose and joy and flow to your life.
What a beautiful way to end. Thank you so much, Jonathan. So we'll let the sun set on this episode as everybody's shadow is going to be 25 feet onto the ground and into the trail of life that they are on. Where can people go to take the Sparkotype test? Where can they go to check out the book?
Yeah, thank you. It's been amazing being able to hang out with you. The Sparkotype assessment is available at sparkotype.com. That's sparkotype.com. Even if you forget the middle E, you'll still end up at our website. And the book Sparked is available at booksellers everywhere.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jonathan, for your time again. And it's an absolute pleasure to hang out and spend time with you here. Hopefully we can do it in person at some time once things open back up and we cross paths again.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Jonathan Fields. You can find the Sparkotype assessment at sparketype.com. And you can also check out his personal site, all of his books and everything else at jonathanfields.com. And get his book wherever books are sold. I recommend Amazon and going to get it right now. What an amazing conversation. What an amazing way to end the year of amazing episodes. I remember the first episode of the year with Rob Maurer from Tesla Daily. And just here we are with Jonathan Fields today to just cap it off. And again, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, not just for me, but for my entire team as well. Thank you so much for supporting Smart Passive Income this year. Thank you so much for taking action on things that you listen to, because this isn't just about listening. It's about listening and applying. And I know there's some of you, big shout out to DJ Scoob, who's listened to literally every episode from start to finish. That's episode one from back in 2010 to here we are now. Absolutely incredible. And I hope you find more episodes coming your way to be very valuable, because we definitely have a lot more coming your way. We have some fun plans with them as well, which I'll talk about as they come out next year. But make sure, if you haven't yet subscribed, make sure you do that, because 2022 is going to be amazing. And we're going to do it together. Thank you so much. Take care. And I look forward to serving you next year. Cheers. Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Gartland. Sound editing by Duncan Brown. The Smart Passive Income podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days. And it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/business rewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more. Starting a business can feel daunting and confusing, but it doesn't have to be. That's why Terry Rice started the Launch Your Business podcast, another awesome show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Terry shares strategic actions, specific tools, and what he refers to as high-performance mindsets that allow you to thrive under pressure. Recent guests include rapper T.I., Amy Porterfield, and yours truly. And Terry frequently publishes value pack solo shows too, like this one titled How to Write Proposals That Get Accepted and Don't Take Forever to Write. Great stuff. So make sure you listen in to Launch Your Business right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.